Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you for tuning in. Tenet and Pearl and Rice, oh my. Wow, did you watch all this garbage over the weekend? Woo! From Bob Schieffer in the morning to Scott Pelley at night on Sunday. Oh my God. Do you agree with me that, what's his name? George Tenet is right on the verge. I mean, what a gibbering idiot. I'm not the least bit surprised by what he says about being ignored about this, ignored about that, but I thought his eyeballs were going to pop out a couple of times. I think he's a fake, a liar, and a phony. I don't believe a word he says. When he denies torture, when he says he talked to Richard Pearl, when was it, Kathy? The day after, September 11th, saw him in D.C. Pearl was, the scumbag Pearl was stuck in France, couldn't get home like most people. My sister and brother-in-law were stuck in England. They couldn't get home for, what was it, about 4, 5, 6 days, wasn't it, Kathy? So, you know, Tenet's a liar. He's covering his ass. He's worked in a den of thieves and liars and sneaks and cutthroats for so long, he's become one of them. I'm not saying his accusations about Cheney aren't correct. Of course they're correct. Cheney's a murderous killer who doesn't care about anything. But Tenet? Oh, my God. All right, just for an example, let's play this part from Tenet. Can you play this? This was on 60 Minutes last night. See, Tenet's out there talking to everybody because he's got a book to sell, Center of the Storm. And that's fine. I'm damn sure not going to buy it because all the good parts will be excerpted all over the Internet, so you don't have to buy it. Just know that Tenet, the rat bastard that he is ratting out the rat bastards that ratted him out. It's just a den of thieves, a nest of vipers, just people with their knives out stabbing and hacking at each other. It's just astonishing to write, but I mean to watch. Anyway, he's on with Scott Pelley on 60 Minutes last night, and Scott Pelley runs some audio or videotape about Condoleezza Rice can't figure out why Tenet's so pissed. Now, listen here. Tenet explains the threat. He claims he explained in an emergency briefing to Rice, which she ignored. And then, of course, 9/11 happened.
Essentially, the briefing says there are going to be multiple spectacular attacks against the United States. We believe these attacks are imminent. Mass casualties are a likelihood. You're telling Condoleezza Rice in that meeting in the White House in July that we should take offensive action in Afghanistan now, before 9/11.
We need to consider immediate action inside Afghanistan now. We need to move to the offensive.
You're meeting with the president every morning.
Yeah.
Why aren't you telling the president, Mr. President,
I don't know.
I
don't know.
We have to do this now. Forget about the bureaucracy. I need this authority this afternoon.
Right. Because the United States government doesn't work that way. The president is not the action officer.
Oh.
You bring the action to the National Security Advisor and people who set the table for the president to decide on policies they're going to implement.
You thought you had some time.
Well, you didn't know that. You thought you might have time. You can second guess me till the cows come home. That's the way I did my job.
And you got the medal to prove it, and you're a half-assed, incompetent freak. What is this? He meets with the president every morning. He's got information, he claims, about massive, multiple, high-casualty attacks inside the United States. And this lying SOB doesn't even bring it up? With Bush? Or, okay, with Cheney? And Pelley says, why aren't you telling the president, Mr. President, it's terrifying, we have to do this now. And Pelley makes the question is so direct. Hey, jackass, forget the bureaucracy. You're claiming that this is an imminent, going to happen in 10 minutes kind of disaster. And you're going to sit back and say, well, the president, government doesn't work that way. The president is not the action officer. What? Bush is the decider. Did you miss that little speech or that little sentence of his, George? The other George is the decider. Oh, my God, these people make me sick. And then Scott Pelley, oh, you thought you had some time. You know, when Tenet says the government doesn't work that way, the president's not the action officer, you bring the action to the National Security Advisor. What if the National Security Advisor is an incompetent shoe fetishist? What do you do then? You still go to her and say, Madam Secretary, Madam Advisor, Madam... Look here. See these little dots? Those are warheads. And they're coming our way, so to speak. Oh, well, never mind. I have shoes to go buy. Jesus, God. And then Pelley lets him off the hook. Pelley says, oh, I get it. So you thought you had some time. You know, right there, Pelley, when this freak said, you bring the action to the National Security Advisor, not the president, right then, Pelley should have said, are you out of your big-headed mind, you lantern-jawed freak? Are you crazy? You just sat here and said there's going to be multiple attacks in the United States and you don't even mention it? But no, Scott Pelley, you know, like Bob Woodward and so many of these saps, you know, they want to be on the inside. They want to continue to get the good interviews. And so they just, yeah, oh, okay. My God. No, I've made up my mind. George Tenet is a freak. We'll get to some more of this. Well, former CIA officers are agreeing. You know, you could just watch Tenet as he's out doing his book tour, talking to all these very heavy-duty anchor people. Have you noticed this? My God, they resurrected Tom Brokaw to talk to him. They have this one talking to him and that one talking to him. Oh, wow. Hey, hot time in the old town tonight, right? And you can tell by listening to the interview, you don't have to have a degree in medicine or psychology or basket weaving to realize this guy is a nutball. He's off his rocker. Tenet is so far out in the ozone, I'm surprised he isn't walking around saying, they're coming to take me away. Watch out for the little ones. God, this whole crime family, have you ever seen anything like this? A shoe fetishist as Secretary of State, the former head of the CIA as some gonzo jerkball who doesn't ever decide to tell the president when he thinks there's going to be imminent big attacks. We've got a vice president who is just filthy to the core, walking around with wires trailing out of his ass. You're shooting people left and right. Okay, to the left, maybe to the right. Who knows how many he shot dead? We got a former Secretary of Defense who talks about war on the moon. I mean, I've never seen anything like this. This is these are the adults. Oh, God. Be still, my rapidly trip-hammering heart. It's just incredible. A lot of impeach Bush, Cheney demonstrations around the country over the weekend. Some of them are very creative. Here in Atlanta, on a hillside near a neighborhood where a lot of traffic goes through, it's near the Carter Center, they spelled out with candles the word impeach as dusk fell. Well, I call them candles. They were bigger than candles. A lot of people in the Inman Park Festival Parade that I went to, that Kathy and I and the kid went to over the weekend, a lot of people in that parade with impeach Bush and impeach Cheney. And as they passed the crowd, there must have been, what would you say, Kathy, at that festival, 150,000 people. It was just enormous, enormous crush of humanity. And as this parade went down the street where the parade went, every time they advanced 10 feet with that impeach Bush, impeach Cheney, the crowd would just break out in raucous cheers and whistling. And George Tenet, this guy just, oh my God, what a confederacy of dunces.
Thank you. must collectively get after those who kill in the name of some kind of false religion.
Past the hour. Yeah, the long knives in the neoconservative community, people like Michael Ledeen and Richard Pearl and the rest of these people, the long knives have really come out. George Tenet, you see, his big mistake was he was a holdover from the Clinton administration. But they are going to gut this guy like a sunfish. The right-wingers are just going to rip it into a million pieces. And they probably should, because Tenet is a phony. Apparently he's a liar on several issues, but he's also, and this is the worst part, he's a coward. He's a bureaucratic coward. I don't care how much bluster he comes across with when he's sitting there talking with Scott Pelley, or Bob Schieffer, or whomever, he's talked with over the past 72 hours. It doesn't make any difference. When he was actually in, a situation where the people who control the fate of hundreds of millions of people on this planet, he didn't have the courage to stand there and take a stand and make his point. People like him make me sick, just absolutely disgusted. When I see the video that's been run over and over in the past 3-4 days of Tenet and that hideous Negroponte sitting behind Colin Powell as Powell spewed out the kind of lies into the United Nations General Assembly that is, were usually reserved for people like Nikita Khrushchev. It was just astonishing to see this baggy-eyed freak sitting there, this George Tenet. So screw you, George. You're a liar and a coward. You got your medal. What the hell do you want? You get a nice pension. Go away. Go away. You'll make a lot of money selling your book. A lot of people will probably buy it to find out what the truth is, only the truth is there's no truth in your book except for the fact that you were dealing in a nest of vipers. So you got bit. Guess what, pal? They're going to bite you so many times now you're going to look like a sieve. To hell with George Tenet. Bob over at headonradio.com sent this to me. It's a letter to the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. And Bob says, you can't make this stuff up. All right, just a letter to the editor. Now it says that the headline, this is from Monday, April 16th. The headline of the letter is Daylight Exacerbates Warning. Warning, not warm, but warn, W-A-R-N-I-N-G. This is from Connie Meskimen in Hot Springs, Arkansas. To the editor, you may have noticed that March of this year was particularly hot. As a matter of fact, I understand that it was the hottest March since the beginning of the last century. All of the trees were fully leafed out, and legions of bugs and snakes were crawling around during a time in Arkansas when, on a normal year, we might see a snowflake or two. This should come as no surprise to any reasonable person. As you know, daylight saving time started almost a month early this year. You would think that members of Congress would have considered the warming effect that an extra hour of daylight would have on our climate. Or did they? Perhaps this is another plot by liberal Congress to make us believe that global warming is a real threat. Perhaps next time there should be serious studies performed before Congress passes laws with such far-reaching effects. Oh my God! Can you believe this?
That's really kind of sad, actually.
Oh! Daylight savings time! That's what did it! Oh, dear God. And don't you know she's probably an active member of her local Republican Party and goes to church and is convinced the liberals are the spawn of Satan and want to eat fetuses? Oh. Stephen emailed this to me Friday night, I think. He says, Mike, I was hanging on. This is about Mike Gravel, who was one of the eight people who participated in the presentation of these Democratic presidential candidates. Stephen writes, I was hanging on the line at the end of tonight's show, and I wanted to amplify on what your last caller, Marge, was saying. I know that this burden of collective guilt is a very heavy weight on all of us, and I know that sometimes we get overloaded and cynical and not up to bearing our share of responsibility for the wanton death and criminality that we are all lying in one way or another. I get that. It screws up my life, too. Yet, I think you missed something important. The medium is the message, and the TV era is over. The dominant medium is now the net. Thursday night, something important happened. Mike Gravel's candidacy was born. MSNBC didn't even bother to put his name on their website. Yet, by this afternoon, I guess this is Friday, all of Randy's show was devoted to him. The voice of moral authority is unmistakable when you hear it, and we are now such a tightly connected network that news travels fast. Now, I did not expect Mike Gravel to be president. No way. But we now have filled the important niche of fool. According to the Chinese, the fool is one of the most powerful men in the empire because only he can speak the truth. Listen to Gravel again when you are less tired and see if he doesn't give you at least a little thrill. He did once, and we are both old enough to remember. The future looks bright on that train of graphite and glitter under sea by rail. 90 minutes from New York to Paris, well, by 76 will be A-OK.
You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
It's about 26 before the hour. Do you want to get out of the country? You want to go with me? Just for a week? If you haven't checked it out yet, I'm sure you've heard the commercials running on the program, but go to NovaMradio.com or MikeMalloy.com and get some info on the upcoming Truth Seeker Cruise. We're going to go on this cruise this October to the so-called Mexican Riviera. Yeah, I know, but this is going to be a hoot. We've never cruised before, Kathy and I, but it looks like fun. She's coming along. So is the kid. We're bringing Molly. Oh, God. there's some really fantastic rates put together by the travel agency handling this. And if you can get this booked quickly, you can get a super nice balcony stateroom for just $10 more than an ocean view cabin. $10? $10? Jesus. There'll be several opportunities for all of us to hang out during this trip. We're going to have a meet and greet and a cocktail party and a Q&A session and... I think what I'm going to do is, you know, a lot of people ask me, you know, what really happened to Air America? And I've been reluctant, you know, that got me fired. Why am I fired? And, I've tossed a few things out there. But on this trip, I'm going to let you all know what happened. So anyway, see if you can make it. I know it's an ocean cruise. It's going to be fun. I've never done this before. Some of you are cruisers. Well, I used to be a cruiser, but I mean ocean cruisers, and I've never done it before. This is kind of like every time The Nation does this, The Nation magazine, and they get Catherine Vanda Hooven, you know who I mean. And who else do they get? Alexander Coburn, Vanden Huber? What? Open your microphone and talk.
I believe, isn't it Christina Vanden Heuvel?
I have no idea. But she's it.
Oh, you carry on.
Anyway. Oh, and right before I got fired, they were talking about doing this at Air America. And then, you know, right down the pipe with the bankruptcy deal. So we're looking for maybe, I don't know what, 20, 25 people who really want to get funky and go on this cruise. 25 is not 1,000. 1,000 people showed up at the gig in Phoenix. And we had a good time. But, hang out with 25 people. And drink and get rowdy and stuff like that. They've got babysitting service there. Thank you, God. So we'll be stashing Molly at night and hanging out. So anyway, I want to invite the real hardcore Malloy fans. There's an 800 number at NovaMradio.com and at MikeMalloy.com. It'll link you to it. So get in on this now. Like I said, this is a new experience for us. I've never gone on a cruise. So... I'll be telling you more about it. And don't send me emails and say, oh, I'm so sick of hearing your commercial about going on the cruise. Then sign up and come along. This is from Beth in San Francisco. Mike, okay, so the TV news media has a story that is more their speed and depth. The DC Madam. It's a story that any blow-dried news personality can sink their perfectly pearly white teeth into. The sex, the intrigue, the massages. Finally, something that requires no critical thought or journalism whatsoever. It's beautiful. We can go on for days about it. And have that annoying breaking news banner spread across the bottom of the screen, even though there's really nothing new to report. But that's not what bothers me about this story, Beth writes. What makes my blood boil is the fact that these high and mighty Republicans, these family value-toting, abstinence-preaching, moral-hijacking half-wits are hypocrites of the highest order. Not only is the hypocrisy enraging, their excuses for the behavior insults the intelligence of the American people, and that can be hard to do sometimes. So Randall Tobias, quote, had some gals come over to the condo, end quote, and give him a massage. As far as he was concerned, it was just like ordering a pizza. Really. You know what, Randall, Beth writes, stop insulting the sex workers you hired and stop insulting the American people, not to mention embarrassing your wife and family. If you want a massage, if I want a massage, I go to a licensed massage therapist. So your excuse holds as much water as a duck's ass. Just admit that you like to hire hookers, receive your happy ending, and get it out in the open, so to speak. How many more of these Republicans are going to be outed before we throw this entire criminal enterprise out of office and into jails? And to think that none of the Democratic candidates raised their hand to support Kucinich's impeachment of Dick Cheney. Shame, shame on every one of them. Beth in San Francisco. P.S. Speaking of Kucinich, have you seen his wife? No wonder he looks so happy all the time. Or in a daze. You know, I get the feeling Dennis is kind of walking around like, Well, I can't hear you, Kathy. Go ahead. Open your microphone.
It's driving me crazy. She looks like the actress from Far From Heaven and the one that was in Boogie Nights and the second.
Julianne Moore.
Doesn't she look just like her?
She does. Now, let's focus on what Beth wrote about. I want to focus on it for a minute because you find humor where you can find it, right? Everything is so murderously dark and bloody and death and insanity. But ABC News' Brian Ross, who broke this story for the TV heads, revealed that the list of customers of this alleged prostitution service includes White House and Pentagon officials, as well as prominent attorneys. Oh, please let it be. Please let it be. Brian Ross said, quote, there are thousands of names, tens of thousands of phone numbers, and there are people there at the Pentagon, lobbyists, people at the White House, prominent lawyers, a long, long list, end quote. Ross added that the women who worked for the service, allegedly as prostitutes, quote, include university professors, legal secretaries, scientists, and military officers. What? Really? What was that movie that plays on softcore porn TV every once in a while about... it was Catherine Deneuve. It goes all way back to the 60s. What was she took a job as an afternoon. What was that movie?
Belle de Jour.
Thank you.
No problem.
On Friday last, Brian Ross broke the news about Randall Tobias. And of course, under Bush, Tobias, we talked about this Friday, oversaw a program helping men in poor countries, quote, develop healthy relationships with women, which meant to abstain until you're married, never, never, never deal with a sex worker, and always, always, always use a condom. Never use a condom, because condoms did not stop pregnancies or AIDS or having your thingy infiltrated by Satan. So, but the story goes on. I think progress. Senior Bush official linked to escort service resigns. That was Tobias. The Washington Post reports via Atrios that within minutes of the announcement of this jerk Tobias ordering people over for a massage, his biography was removed from the USAID website. According to Atrius, State Department officials declined to comment further on the reasons for Tobias's resignation. Oh, I know. He wanted to be with his family. One person close to Tobias said, I'm sad today. The president loves him, and Condoleezza absolutely loves him. Our senior correspondent writes, is there some kind of servicing going on between the three mentioned in the story? Yeah, I say ew, too. Have a nice trip down the memory hole, Mr. Tobias. And then Chris in Minnesota writes, wait, there's more. Here's the more. Randall Tobias resigned upon admitting that he frequented a Washington escort service, oversaw a controversial policy advocated by the religious right that required any U.S.-based group receiving anti-AIDS funds to take an anti-prostitution loyalty oath. Go ahead, scream. Go ahead. Okay. Aid groups bitterly opposed the policy, charging that it was so broad and applied even to their private funds that it would obstruct the outreach to sex workers who are at high risk of transmitting the AIDS virus. But Bush wouldn't budge. He signed a 2003 National Security Presidential Directive saying, prostitution and related activities are inherently harmful and dehumanizing. Several groups and countries had their funds cut due to the policy. Brazil lost $40 million for one of its most successful anti-AIDS strategies, which was persuading sex workers to make their customers use condoms or other measures to stop spreading the disease. Now, because Brazil was doing, well, you got to use a condom. Oh, no, you don't. That's a little home of the devil. If you don't stop this, we're going to cut off your money and let y'all rot with AIDS. Well, and they did. During an Ask the White House online chat a couple of years ago, hypocrite Tobias defended this policy, saying the U.S. was, quote, partnering with communities to begin fighting sex trafficking and prostitution while still serving victims of these activities, end quote. Tobias added that he was overseeing several, quote, highly successful relationship programs aimed at men and boys to help them develop healthy relationships with women, end quote. A truly inspired idea, having someone who pays for gals to come over to the condo to give me a massage and have that freak run programs on developing healthy relationships with women. Ah! It just never stops. It just never stops. And I have a little more on this. Yeah, I have a little more from Carol Lee, who's with the Bay Area Sex Workers Advocacy Network, who's kind enough to send me some information. I'm going to pass it on to you. Like I say, you've got to find humor, even if it's dark, miserable humor, where you got to find it, right?
Love a neighbor just like we'd like to love themselves.
Yeah. Okay. Carol Lee, who is Bay Area Sex Workers Advocacy Network. If you want to check out the website, it's BaySwan, BaySwan, BaySwan.org. Carol writes, the horror blogs and sex worker email lists are abuzz with latest Republican scandal. Escorts and masseuses banter smugly, debating the ethics of outing clients as a decriminalization strategy. According to Brian Ross, blah, 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 Deputy Secretary of State Randall Tobias submitted his resignation, blah, 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 blah. Tobias was the director of U.S. Foreign Assistance Administrator, U.S. Agency for International Development, oversaw AIDS funding, and so on and so forth. The extreme hypocrisy of Tobias' promotion of an agenda to stop prostitution is obvious. Tobias is an actual trick who robs programs of money to fight HIV on the grounds that they don't oppose prostitution, all the while indulging in these private services in Washington. That's according to San Francisco sex worker Scarlett Harlot. Scarlett the Harlot or just Scarlett Harlot? I'm not sure. Carol doesn't tell me. Robin of, I don't know who Robin is, but this is good. Robin adds, these policies breed corruption, demanding abstinence of the lawmakers and enforcers. Reports of police and politicians using the services of sex workers are frequent fodder for juicy news. Scarlett goes on to say, of course, zealous efforts to stop commercial sex through punitive policies and criminalization have historically been championed by manipulative politicians who also have been guilty clients and religious and ideological fundamentalists, end quote. As Deborah Palfrey's list is revealed, that's the woman, the so-called D.C. madam, and hypocrisies of the Reagan administration's moralism unravel, the sex workers debate Ms. Palfrey's strategy and wonder if this scandal might affect their legal status. One longtime Coyote activist says, quote, I always thought that at least when the clients are holier-than-thou fundamentalists, law and order, gung-ho politicians, and so forth, then when the provider gets arrested, all bets are off. If more of these hypocrites are exposed, perhaps the law would change. Tobias, Carol writes, is the second prominent man to be identified as a customer of the Palfrey so-called sexual fantasy service. He is yet another well-qualified Bush appointee who came to his job with a resume including a stint as CEO of drug manufacturer Eli Lilly. Along with his wife Marianne, Tobias donated over $100,000 to Republican candidates, according to the campaign finance website OpenSecrets.org. This is just the tip of the iceberg, writes Scarlett Harlot. Not that I blame Tobias for receiving a massage. And it goes on and on and on. Thanks for writing, Carol. I appreciate it. Hypocrisy within the ranks of the Bush crime family on any level at this point is like declaring over and over and over again that water is wet, the wind blows, the sun will warm your face, and ice is cold. I mean, it means nothing. It means the hypocrisy, the revelation of hypocrisy means nothing. There is nothing about the Bush administration from top to bottom and all their mamas and daddies and cousins and uncles and nieces. Everybody even remotely connected to the Bush crime family is a liar and a hypocrite. All of them, even if they're connected by marriage, even if they're connected 20 times removed by the mere fact that they are remotely linked by marriage or blood to this filthy organization, means that person is a liar, a coward, a hypocrite, a thief, and either willing or unwilling co-conspirator in mass murder. Whoa. Is that what you call a blanket accusation? Yes! It's exactly what it is. Scarlett Harlot. I wonder if we could get her on the show. With a name like that, wouldn't that be fun? That's like our good friend here in Atlanta, Dolores French, who is very active in, or was, I guess Dolores is, hell, she's almost my age, but she's very active in...
Excuse me?
Very active in prostitution rights here, sex worker rights. At one time, she was employed by the city of Atlanta to try to advise cops on how to handle prostitutes of any gender working the streets of Atlanta.
And you know this because
I've known her for years. I never
known her for.
Come on, Gabby.
Define.
I've never.
Have you been or were you ever?
No. The answer is an absolute resounding no. Dolores and I were great friends. I knew her before she was a prostitute. I knew her when she was a writer. We were both writers at The Great Speckled Bird, the radical voice of the South, back when you took your life in your hands to write for a publication that was called The Radical Voice of the South. Don't get me started on how many times the FBI came in and either checked out everything they could check out or burned the building. Eventually, the building was burned. That's when I knew Dolores. Years later, she got out of the writing business and got into the sex worker business, and then wrote a book about it. She's a good girl. I like her.
And by like her, you mean
You know Dolores. You know Dolores' son. No gas on May 15th, 2007. I got this. Somebody sent it to me. Don't pump gas on May 15th. In April 1997, there was a gas out conducted nationwide in protest to gas prices. Gasoline prices dropped 30 cents a gallon overnight, according to this. On May 15th, 2007, all Internet users are asked to not go to a gas station. There are 73 million plus American members currently on the Internet network, and the average car takes about $30 to $50 to fill up. If all users did not go to the pump on the 15th, it would take almost $3 billion out of the oil company profits for just one day. So please don't go to the gas station, it says here on May 15th, and let's try to put a dent in the Middle Eastern oil industry for at least one day. May 15th, I'll do it. I won't buy gas. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. It's about 7 past the hour. I'm getting several emails, a bunch over the weekend, about the Bush protests, the impeachment protests, everywhere from Miami to Atlanta to Madison to New York. And none of these protests were enormous. The one in Miami, somebody who wrote to me estimated maybe 1,500 people, if that big. But it doesn't matter. At this point, it doesn't matter. What does matter is that it's constant, a constant, continuous drumbeat to get these bastards out of office. We cannot afford 20 more months of these thugs. New York Times reported this morning, no big surprise here, that the crime family foresees its surge lasting well into 2008. To hand it off to the Democratic president who is going to come up next. And don't pay attention to what Hillary says. If George Bush doesn't stop this war when I'm president, I will. What does that mean? Does that mean 2 minutes after you take the oath of office, Mrs. Clinton, or 4 years into your presidency? Who knows? The Times said the Bush administration will not try to assess whether the troop increase in Iraq is producing signs of political progress or greater security until September. That's when we'll know. Now, disregard. You and I are said to disregard the death reports, the bombings. And as we went on the air tonight, there was a report of several, as many as 10 explosions inside the so-called Green Zone. And I haven't seen anything since then about that, but I'm sure we will have some sort of report on that before the night is over. The Times says in interviews over the past week, White House officials made clear that the White House is gradually scaling back its expectations for the government of President Kamal al-Maliki. The timelines they are now discussing suggest that the White House may maintain the increased number of American troops in Iraq well into next year. It's just, you know, how to say it? When Bush dressed up in military drag and landed on the aircraft carrier, I think we had 200 plus Americans had been murdered in his war game. 200. Since then, another 3,200 have died, and 25,000 have been grievously wounded. And pick a number, 100,000, 500,000, 600,000 Iraqis have been murdered. God knows how many Iraqis have been injured and wounded. How many fetuses have been blown to pieces? How many children are now without parents? But as David Kurtz says at Think Progress, this newest lie and the revelation now that the escalation will last into 2008, Kurtz writes, this is a milestone in the Bush administration's public spin of the war, marking the first official acknowledgement that the surge and all the attendant fuss were nothing more than an elaborate stopgap intended to buy time so that the colossal failure of Bush's foreign policy can be pawned off on the next president. Don't you just want to smack somebody upside the head? Condoleezza Rice, of course, she was one of the... Now, tell the truth. Isn't this woman just grinding on your patience? Huh? Haven't you really, really had enough? You talk about being overexposed or oversold. I am so sick of seeing her mince across a gangway or a stage or an office somewhere to meet somebody. Oh, God. George Tenet, says that, in his book, and we've talked about this, there was never a serious debate within the Bush crime family about the imminence of the Iraqi threat. Condoleezza Rice begs to differ. On CNN's late edition yesterday, she said, quote, we all thought that the intelligence case was strong. Even the weapons inspectors thought Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. So there's no blame here of anyone. That's a lie. I mean, Rice is like every other one of these suckers. She will lie at the drop of a shoe. It doesn't make any difference. Bring up a topic, she'll lie. On March 7th, 2000, and thanks to Think Progress for this also, on March 7th, 2003, the head of the IAEA, Mohammed al-Baradi, reported that there was no evidence that Saddam Hussein had any nuclear weapons or was in the process of acquiring them. Hans Blix said, quote, by then, Mohammed al-Baradi revealed that Niger was not authentic. British intelligence falsely claimed that Iraq had been trying to acquire uranium from Niger. And by the way, there's a report out now that just came out that says the phony documents about Niger and Yellowcake come directly from Dick Cheney. This Cheney bastard. Oh, my God. Here's another quote from February 20th, 2003. So frustrated have the inspectors become, finding nothing, that one source has referred to the U.S. intelligence they've been getting as garbage after garbage after garbage. That's a quote. The inspectors find themselves caught between the Iraqis, who are masters at the weapons-hiding shell game, and the United States, whose intelligence they found to be circumstantial, outdated, or just wrong. And then on January 9th, 2003, Chief United Nations Weapon Inspector Hans Blix told the UN Security Council that his inspection teams had not found any smoking guns after going to some 125 Iraqi sites. It just goes on and on and on. And Rice is just, I don't know. If ever there was an incompetent member of a ruling clique in any country, Rice reminds me of the very Soviets that she devoted her studies in trying to understand. She sounds just like them, just like the bureaucrats deeply embedded in the Soviet Union. Except she damn sure knows how to buy shoes, and she's a smart dresser, no question about that. Is that a sexist comment? No, it's not a sexist comment. She goes out of her way to look just as chic as possible. Good for her. I frankly don't care. The shoe thing drives me nuts. It reminds me of Mrs. Marcos. I get fixed on things and can't get away from it. Let's get a look. Have we got time for the first one of Condi on Face the Nation? Okay, this is with Bob Schieffer. Now, she's under subpoena threat from Henry Waxman. She says, he gives Waxman the middle finger. We'll see how that works out. She finds herself at the center of another maelstrom over Tenet's assertion that she ignored the threat the FBI issued about Al-Qaeda on in 9/11. I'm sorry, that the CIA issued. First, a little snippet here of Tenet. It comes from CBS's 60 Minutes, and then Condi is left to answer his charge, and Bob Schieffer's in here, too.
Essentially, the briefing says there are going to be multiple spectacular attacks against the United States. We believe these attacks are imminent. Mass casualties are a likelihood.
So what he is saying is that you just sort of brushed him off.
Well, it's very interesting because that's not what George told the 9/11 Commission at the time. He said that he felt that we had gotten it. And in fact, the very next day or the day after, Steve Hadley, hardly a third-tier official, sat with the intelligence agencies to try and determine what more we could do. We were concerned, for instance, could we go after Abu Zubaydah, who might have some information. But the idea of launching preemptive strikes into Afghanistan in July of 2001, this is a new fact, and I will have to look.
Why
I can't,
did he say something?
Well,
like
I don't know. I don't know what we were supposed to preemptively strike in Afghanistan. Perhaps somebody can ask that.
Well, gee, Condi, all your neocon buddies got all head up over Clinton bombing a so-called aspirin factory in Africa when he went after Al-Qaeda. Aren't you paid to know what's going on with Mideast affairs when you were NASA NSA director? You know, the aspirin factory, where was that? In Nigeria, Liberia, Ghana? Who knows, right, Condi? Oh, God. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we have... We have another here from Condi, two more from Condi, and then we're probably going to get to phone calls. So if you want to get online here, it's 800-989-1480. I'm Mike Malloy.
You never know, licking bush might be nice, and I'll volunteer for Congolese rice. Powell likes a blonde that's stacked, and Rumsfeld wants his fanny smack. And Mr. Cheney, he gets quite a thrill if when you pop his cork, you shout, oil spill! We need more sex in the White House! More sex in the White House! More sex in the White House!
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
Twenty-two past the hour. Okay, I'm hold off on the emails now, okay? Apparently, the May 15th don't buy gasoline thing is not real. Although I'm just not going to buy gasoline on the 15th because somebody sent that to me. Why can't it be real? And apparently the letter to the Arkansas Democrat Gazette is not real either. It was real. It appeared in the paper, but it was written by a guy. Connie is a guy who's a lawyer and has written a couple of letters to the editor like that that have been published. And he does it as, to make fools out of both the newspapers and the readers, and it certainly worked with me. Thank goodness you folks have time to check Snopes.com. I'll believe anything. Just send it in. I'll just read it on the air, right? That's not true, but, All right, back to Condoleezza Valdez, the shoe lady, on Face the Nation yesterday. On the so-called slam dunk comment assigned to Tenet, Bob Schieffer says, Tenet also says that when he talked about it would be a slam dunk, he meant it would be easy to make the case for going into Iraq, to make the case to the American people. And he says, instead, officials, and I guess this he means you too, sort of hung him out to dry and then used as an excuse to say why we went in.
You know, it's very interesting. When George said slam dunk, everybody understood that he believed that the intelligence was strong. We all believed the intelligence was strong. The sad fact of how all of this has gotten talked about is that there was a problem with intelligence. But it wasn't just a problem with intelligence in the United States. It was an intelligence problem worldwide.
Oh.
Services across the world thought that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. The United Nations thought that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction or would not have had these draconian sanctions that were being levied against Iraq.
But you take what he said. Do you take it seriously, or are you insulted by it? What is your response to it?
I can only remember once speaking to this slam dunker a couple of times, and what I said was what I've just said to you. Yes, George said it, but we all thought the intelligence was strong.
Oh, my God. An intelligence problem worldwide. Well, let's see. When you have Colin Powell, the Secretary of State, sitting with a couple of flesh-eating ghouls behind him from the Bush crime family, making just stupefying presentation to the U.N. Security Council with his fake vial of anthrax and phony threats of mobile weapons labs. What the hell, Condi? What are people supposed to think? You know, I'll tell you who was never fooled about this at all. The Mossad. The Israeli intelligence officials sat back and watched this happen with Colin Powell and the Bush crime family and just said, oh, my God. Can you believe this? Last one from the shoe lady. We got time? No? All right. We'll wait until after the break. Everyone understood that he believed that the intelligence was strong, the shoe lady says. Well, not everybody, Ms. Valdez. Not everybody. But it's incredible to watch this happen, isn't it? To see George Tenet, who, I mean, do you have any doubts from watching him that this guy is about as competent to run the CIA as you are or I am? In other words, not at all. Another big farty frat boy type. I don't know why Clinton put him in. Maybe this was Clinton's revenge against the Bush crime family. You know, to give this guy a job about a year before Clinton's going to bail, and he sticks around and does this, whatever he did, to the Bush crime family. But, of course, then you have to believe that the Bush crime family was 2% honorable, and we know that's not the case.
Tell me, who hid the WMD in Saddam Hussein's palace? Nobody found it. That's because it came from Dallas. He went in without a clue. Now he's left Iraq.
We cannot let terrorists and rogue nations hold this nation hostile or hold our allies hostile.
Hostile, dog style, who cares? 26 before the hour. All right, back to the shoe lady on Face the Nation. And this is kind of the shoe lady has learned to over-talk someone who tries to interrupt her. And let's face it, isn't about 90% of conversation people just kind of talking over each other? Kathy and I do it. Everybody I know does it.
I have no idea what you're talking about right now.
It doesn't make any difference. But, you know, talking over each other when you're doing a back-and-forth dialogue is just normal. It's the way we, you know, how many people do you know talk like this? Hello, Kathy. How are you today?
I'm well. And you?
Oh, fairly okay, although I did have a touch of gas this morning.
Perhaps that was the brisket.
It may have been. Now, who do you know who taught? Nobody. So listen to this. This is on her resistance to testify under oath about that fake Nigerian, how do you say it? That fake uranium claim from Niger that Henry Waxman wants to ask her about. Schieffer asks her this. You find yourself currently in this dispute over Iraq with the White House and the Congress. You find yourself now under subpoena from Congress to tell what you knew about Saddam's weapons programs. Are you going to comply with that subpoena?
This is one of the most examined issues, how the Niger language got into the president's speech, what was its genesis, it was in the NIE, what was thought of it. This has been examined by a bipartisan commission, by Chuck Robb.
Answer the question!
By the Senate Select Intelligence Committee. I was asked about it in questions for the record for my confirmation hearing. I have given Chairman Waxman hundreds of pages of documentation,
so
including several letters. Let me just say, I respect the oversight role of Congress,
really,
and I'm perfectly willing to continue to try to answer whatever questions Chairman Waxman may have about this very thoroughly investigated issue.
Well, you will
but
not
there
testify
is,
in
this
person.
Is a White House issue, and I was National Security Advisor. That means I was at the time an advisor to the president, and there's a constitutional issue here that the White House will have to handle.
So, at this point, you are going to resist that subpoena?
This is a matter for White House counsel.
Yeah, don't ask me. I'm just the Secretary of State. You mean like what Torquemada Abu Gonzalez used to do? White House counsel or Harriet Myers? Upstanding folks like that? So Schieffer asked her three times. She just won't answer. She's waiting for Negroponte to tell her what to do, maybe? Oh, my God. I'm perfectly willing to continue to try to answer. Do you like that, the wording, to continue to try to answer whatever question Chairman Waxman may have about this very thoroughly investigated issue? Yeah, she'll continue to try to answer. Just don't put me under oath. Don't put me under oath, and let's do it in private, away from, you know, nosy people. It's astonishing, isn't it? It is just astonishing. Well, I'll tell you what. If you get a chance, you need to read the open letter to George Tenet from how many former CIA? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. These are people who were not CIA officers, but worked in high-level intelligence and national security positions. Oh, I'm sorry. That would be a colonel, retired U.S. Army, former chief of Middle East Division Defense Intelligence Agency. Thomas Martins, director for nonproliferation, Homeland Defense under Clinton and Bush. And then the CIA officers, Phil Giraldi, Ray McGovern, Larry Johnson, Jim Marcinkowski, Vince Canestraro, and David McMichael. If you get a chance, and you can find this, an open letter to George Tenet should be very easy to find. I was going to read the whole thing on the air, but it's just a bit too long. It's an incredible letter that pretty much lays out George Tenet as being, you know, one of the liars, one of the thugs, one of the halfwits, one of the incompetents. I have never seen an administration like this one in terms of incompetency, from Condoleezza Rice to Donald Rumsfeld. Remember Donald Rumsfeld? You go to war with the army you have, not with, I mean, my God. Okay. At about 20 before the hour, let's do some phone calls here. Let's start with Sandra, who's calling from Berkeley, California. Hey, Sandra.
Hey.
Hey, it's a mess you all have out there on the maze.
Yeah, it's really not that bad, actually.
Well, the whole damn road collapsed, didn't it?
Well, yeah, but they already started fixing it. Arnold Schwarzenegger's on it, so.
Oh, good, okay.
So, listen, I mean, impeach them, like, yesterday, and could we have everything that they've done be null and void, you know, like...
No.
So we have to, you know, be retroactive. But I don't even think teaching is going to happen, because I think they're just going to be able to keep blocking it, you know, even with people name like Block. But I think that I literally think they have to send in the people with the white coats, because anybody that's this stupid. And, you know, I mean, I met Arianna Huffington a few years ago before the last election. I was saying, how can we elect this guy? He's incompetent. If I could see that he was incompetent, I don't work in Washington. I never met the guy. You can't tell me that other people in this country didn't know. I'm not the smartest person in the world. Right?
Now, which one are you talking about?
I'm talking about George Bush, for one thing.
Yeah, okay.
I'm talking about...
Because they're all, Sandra,
down the line, you know?
Yeah, right down the line.
Trickle down, you know?
God.
So, you know, I wanted to say that. And another thing, I think the oil protest is a good idea. I thought of that myself, but I think we should do it for a whole week. That's when it would really make a difference. But I have an idea, or my partner had an idea, and one of my best friends, that she wanted to say, why don't we protest against the press? The press is the one that helped get us into this, among all these other people. Why can't we just make little signs that say press, you know, when you put a no across it? Yeah. Just stand out in front of all the press companies and protest against them. We're supposed to have a free press in this country. Well, we don't. But we are, it's in the Constitution.
Right.
So I think if we stand there, I mean, I think we need to change the law that Ronald Reagan made, you know, but we don't need to go there about the, you know, the trust. The antitrust is what's caused this, but... Right now, I think we need to be out there saying we want our press back. We want to have, you know, we're doing it on the internet right now, and then that's good, but we need to do more than that.
Well, I think you just answered your own theory or question there. The internet is the new news medium. And granted, there's an awful lot of garbage on the new news medium. I bit into two of the stories tonight that are garbage. But that's where I think rational people are getting more news than the people who watch television news. I still watch television news, and I do it just – sometimes I do get some information. Sometimes they screw up and give me the truth. Very seldom, but occasionally they do. But I also watch television news still – for some of the visuals to see, you know, what these stories look like. And the third reason is just to try to understand how far off the mark television news really can be. Now, I still trust to a greater degree, not very much, but to a greater degree, print medium. I do. Maybe that's because...
How much longer, though?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, the Los Angeles Times was just sold. I mean, you know, I mean, how much longer is that even going to be? And I think that we need, as the people, to let the press know whether it's online and it's ABC News Online, or whether it's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or whether it's on TV. That if we're not listening, it's not going to matter. If people don't listen to it and people don't watch it, they're not going to have a program.
That's true. That's very true. All right. Well, you make a good point. Thanks, Sandra.
All right.
I appreciate
you
checking.
Bye.
All right. Take care. Yeah, you know, she's right about ignore the press, boycott the press. Have you noticed how little mea culpas are flying about? I'm not talking about the Tenet story, but the overall, just the entire Bush administration. And this abominable invasion and occupation of this poor, sad country, Iraq, how the press, and that's all-encompassing, news media, let's use that term, how, with a few exceptions, I think the New York Times has recently editorialized about, oops, you know, sorry, we're not going to do it again, we really beat the drums for war. These are my words, not theirs. I don't know about the Washington Post. Washington Post, to me, seems to be in the verge of it, or having, in the middle of a nervous breakdown. L.A. Times, like Suzanne just pointed out, has been sold to, or Sandra just pointed out, has been sold to recently to a group that, I think one of the first things they did, was it the new group that fired Robert Scheer because he spoke too much about the truth? Maybe it wasn't the new group, but I know Scheer was, you know, made to leave. So, yeah, to hold the press to at least to some sort of standard, as we pointed out the other night, and most of you already know, a free press, or the press itself, whatever that means these days, is the only occupation that has a constitutional protection. It's right there in the First Amendment. Dorothy in Phoenix writes, Mike, I find it ironical that the media is afraid of outing the White House and Pentagon Johns while they have no problem outing an undercover CIA agent. Yeah, I noticed that too, Dorothy.
I'm sure that Europe is a lovely place to visit. My wife would love to go there every single year. But they're just puppies.
Yep, 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 yep.
They need to stick their yips, the big dogs over here. I will rule the world forever. I'm straight and white and male, American and free.
Condoleezza, check my pussy.
Bill O'Reilly, Diebold Systems, Master Stretch and me.
Nighty night, truth seekers. Time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer. More Mike Malloy.
Don't you dare to try and stop us. No one could for long. Searchlight on my trail. Tonight's the night. All systems fail. Hey, you. Good looking female. Come in.
It's about 10 before the hour. All right, back to your phone calls. Is that what we were doing? I just completely had a brain fart here. I have no idea what we were doing. I was looking at Crooks and Liars, a six-minute video of Stephanie this morning handling the interview with, what's his name? I'm drawing a blank again. And, got the day started today, I looked at Kathy and said, oh, my God, we forgot to turn on Stephanie Miller on MSNBC. Ah! So we will tomorrow for sure. What do we have on? That's right. Molly got in bed with us this morning about 7 o'clock and immediately wanted, what is that, the big red dog? What the hell is that? Huh? Clifford? Clifford the big red dog? And those yakety-yakety cartoons in the morning? I swear to God, it's just such a joy having an almost three-year-old. Mommy, Daddy, I want to watch Clifford the big red dog. Go read a book. No, me hate book. No, she doesn't talk that way. She loves books. I want my brain like mayonnaise.
What is she, a caveman now? Me hate book.
But we have...
Me want Clifford.
Me want Clifford dog. Now, that's why we didn't watch Stephanie Miller this morning. And at 7 a.m., you know, I can't even think straight, much less, you got this warm little cuddly, almost three-year-old kid between you and your spouse. And she's, let me pull the blankets up. I'm cold. I'm going to watch TV. What are you going to say, no?
No, we want to watch Stephanie Miller. Go back to your room. Read a book. Go color.
No. You just kind of lay there and go, okay. Kathy does. I don't say anything that hour of the morning. Mad Dog Millie is calling from Los Angeles. Mad Dog Millie, huh? How did you get that name?
Oh, I thought we talked about it before. Yeah, it's how I go off to people at work.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, when they start telling me how wonderful Bush is. But anyway.
I got you.
Well, yeah, hanging on the phone, it's pretty interesting. You know, we don't get you here in L.A. And I know
you used to, but I have no idea what happened.
But what I want to say was that I wish the commercials on our radio station were as interesting as yours.
Well, you listen online and hear the good commercials, huh?
Well, no, not listening online, but if I'm listening not to your radio station, but to our Air America station.
Uh huh.
We don't have stations telling us that they support progressive groups. I like hearing that. I like knowing that a service supports a progressive cause. I would go to them.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's not what I called about.
Oh, good.
I went to the book festival this weekend over at the LA Times Book Festival.
Yeah.
And it gave me a lot of hope. It really made me optimistic because I didn't anticipate the reaction and the mood of the audience about impeachment and about this government.
Right, right. And you're surprised to find that people are willing, eager to talk about it and make it happen.
And not just, I mean, listen, this is a book crowd. This is not a demonstration I was going to. This was just ordinary folks going out to listen to authors. And the subject was caught up from whoever was speaking. And the audience would just go wild. Yes, impeach him.
Right, that's what I mean. I that's happening more and more. You don't have to go to a demonstration to run into people who are just sick of this. They just want this filthy administration out of there.
Gone. And to hear it was just the first time I've ever heard from just a non-political event that this kind of stuff going on.
It really kind of gives you the goosebumps, doesn't it?
It did, because what happened was, you know, as usual, when I heard a conservative on the panel saying something totally ridiculous, like the economy is good, mm-hmm. that the unemployment was the lowest it's been in a long time, mm-hmm. I couldn't help myself, and I just yelled out, and I said, "That's because they're not counting." And then he said. I was in the front row. He heard me. And he says, "What? Are you upset that there are more jobs?" And I screamed out, "In China." And the lady in front of me says, "I came here to hear them and not you." And I was like, "Oh, you better get used to it, because there are other people behind me screaming too."
Yeah.
Well,
we need more of that in this country. We need more of the people who, when there's a liar standing there or sitting there talking about something, it's got to be like European model, you know, like the Brits or the French or the Italians. Somebody stands up there and starts telling lies. The people don't sit there like damn sheep. You know, they holler back and they say, "You're a liar. That's not true." And that's, you know, you're exactly right. Mad Dog Millie, that's what we need in this country, are people doing what you're doing. When you hear a speaker who's BSing, just, you know, and to hell with it. If people in the audience turn around and say, "Well, I'm here to hear him, not you," what do you want to hear, lies?
And I said to her, you know, it's like you're not in the church. This is a discussion.
There you go.
And I said, if it affected you the way it affected me and the people who are in my trade, you know, I'm an electrician, you wouldn't be talking like that.
That's right. That's right.
I didn't say it quite so nicely, but
I'm sure you didn't. I'm sure you colored it up a little bit, right?
I can't help myself. Anyway,
well, I don't blame you, right, Mad Dog Millie? What? We got a break here. What?
Yeah, no, I take a page from you, and I just let it out, and gets me into trouble every time. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Good for you, Millie. Take care. We'll talk again. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. We have a break. When we come back, more of your phone calls. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. Washington Times, a publication I very seldom quote, but Dick Durbin has not denied any of this. So this is in last Friday's edition of the Washington Times. Durbin, senator from Illinois, referred to as the Senate's number 2 Democrat, says he knew that the American public was being misled into the Iraq War but remained silent. because he was sworn to secrecy as a member of the Intelligence Committee. Durbin said last Wednesday, when talking on the Senate floor about the run-up to the Iraq War in 2002, said, quote, "The information we had in the Intelligence Committee was not the same information being given to the American people. I couldn't believe it. I was angry about it. But frankly, I couldn't do much about it because in the Intelligence Committee, we are sworn to secrecy. We can't walk outside the door and say the statements made yesterday by the White House is in direct contradiction to classified information that is being given to this Congress." End quote. The Bush crime family responded by saying Congress had access to the same intelligence and voted overwhelmingly to go to war, which, of course, is a lie. Durbin said there was no ethical way to notify the public of specific misleading information being touted by the Bush administration because it would have required revealing top-secret information being provided to the Intelligence Committee. See, I'm and it goes on. I just tend to disagree with that. If I'm a senator and I've taken an oath of secrecy or silence because I'm being given information, and I know that the information being given me is false, does that make my oath? Does my oath remain a requirement that somehow I be faithful? I realize I'm garbling up the sentence here. Is it necessary then for me to be faithful to the oath if I know that the information being fed me is a lie? I don't quite get this. Maybe the rules in the Senate. Maybe George Tenet is a bigger half-wit than I think he is. He meets with the president every day and doesn't tell him that there are plots to destroy the country prior to the attack on September 11, 2001. That's only if you believe the official story. God only knows what really happened that day. But if Tenet says he knew something was going to happen, what was he supposed to say to Bush? Mr. President, some of your operatives are going to hit the United States? I don't know. Who knows? But if Tenet claims he can't tell anybody, he's got to go through the chain of command. He's got to tell the National Security Advisor, Condoleezza Rice. And by the way, if she was the National Security Advisor before and after the attack on 2001, what the hell is she doing being the Secretary of State now? Is that not the most massive failure in the history of U.S. intelligence and security? Who was on duty? Condoleezza Rice. So she gets promoted. God. So as far as Durbin is concerned, to the best of my knowledge, he hasn't come out and denied this story in the Washington Times. I mean, he said it not in an interview. He said it on the floor of the Senate. Is that the way it goes? I mean, for Democrats, Republicans don't give a goddamn about anything. They're just lying thugs. They don't care. They couldn't care less. Mitch McConnell and the rest of these filthy Republicans, if they heard lies talked about in the Intelligence Committee, they would just sit there and bobble their heads and say, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's go kill some Iraqis. Let's go kill some Iranians. You know, there's a death struggle with Muslims. Let's go kill Muslims. We'll get to the Jews later. Let's do the Muslims now. Sickening. Why is Dick Durbin not supposed to reveal to the American public that they're being lied to in preparations for an invasion and an occupation? I don't get that. Maybe this Friday the truth will come out, because this Friday is when we have Youth Night. I forgot to mention this. This Friday, the entire program, or as much of it as the kids want to sustain, will be phone calls from people between the ages of 13 and 17. So if you're 13, 14, 15, 16, or 17, Friday night is your night. We haven't done this on Nova M. It's been a long time since we've done it. And usually turns out to be fairly insightful conversation with kids. Okay? So if you're a Ute or you know a Ute, this Friday night is Ute night. So just teenagers in that age bracket will be calling. And we'll start at the top of the show. And if it goes for 10 minutes and then Peter's out, we'll move on to something else. But usually when we do this, it lasts for the entire program. But it's up to the kids if they want to call in. And it's up to adults who normally listen to this program, and you know somebody in that age bracket, and you think they have something to say, turn them on to the program, and Friday night coming. Ute night, as Vinny, my cousin Vinny, said. Youth night this Friday. Teenagers, 13 to 17. Back to your phone calls. Ron is calling from Pennsylvania. Ron, welcome to the program. Hey, Ron.
Hey, sorry, I heard the beep. I didn't know it was my phone.
Yeah, it might have been somebody at the door. Never mind.
Yeah, I just wanted to call and talk kind of briefly about Senator Gravel. One thing that really kind of sort of surprised me was that Chris Matthews had a little chat with him after the debate, and he was sitting there with Keith Olbermann.
Mm-hmm.
And they were asking him questions, and it was sort of strange. The Olbermann was like sniggering in the background the whole time.
Sniggering?
And he said something at the end of the interview, so like Zell Miller is going to endorse Gravel. And Zell Miller is going to endorse Gravel, you know.
Oh, really?
This is Keith Olbermann, yeah. You know, and then this is the guy who poses, you know, as, you know.
Well, what's up with that? I thought I wouldn't. I mean, that's very surprising.
I know. It was really kind of weird because I think what happens is if anyone shows any untoward emotions in these media orchestrated events, they're immediately sort of classed as some sort of insane person. It's really a way to control the debate because basically if you come up with someone who has some sort of like passion for what they're talking about, like, you know, he's Gravel is like all about this national initiative thing where he actually, you know, you extend the idea of like, you know, people actually participating through ballots into what laws get established up at the federal level, not at the state level. That's going to interrupt a lot of people's paychecks, right?
Right.
And I mean, he's no lightweight. I mean, you know, yeah, he got bounced, you know, at the head of the Reagan era, but you know, the guy, you know, was really kind of instrumental in bringing out, you know, the Pentagon Papers. He actually got them published in like, you know, the Beacon Press.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and he organized, like, anti-nuke movements, and he did a filibuster to end the draft in the Vietnam War. And, you know, the thing is, that, like, the Beacon Press Pentagon Papers were edited by, like, Howard Zinn and Chomsky, so you kind of get a flavor where that guy is coming from. And,
right, right.
Well, and, you know, he blocked bills from Nixon. The guy's got cojones.
I'm just surprised that that Olbermann would snicker about somebody who obviously is trying to make points for progressives, liberals, and sane Americans.
Yeah, I think it's just his delivery. He's an old man in a lot of ways, and he's like I think in one speech I listened to, he said, you know, if that becomes an issue, just tell him, you know, that it's time for some adult supervision in D.C.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I caught some flack from some of the listeners to this program for saying that the whole enterprise of having those people on MSNBC was a waste of time. And a lot of people took offense because of Gravel and Kucinich. And I'm not denying Gravel and Kucinich's essential message and the importance of their messages. I'm just saying that to put it on television to me is senseless because television is a medium to make you forget and disregard.
Hey, it's kind of like a sideshow, right?
It is, yeah, exactly. Ron, let me leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll be back after the break, Truth Seekers.
We'll be right back.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
Anyone past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Ramona is calling from Hammond, Indiana. Ramona, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good.
Like the caller said earlier about, you know, being angry and wanting to say something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, my granddaughter and I, we went to our weekly ritual of our protest here in town, and as usual, there was a lot more profanity this weekend than there was before.
Directed at you guys?
Yeah, directed at us, and we actually had garbage thrown at us. It was a McDonald's bag.
Isn't that nice?
So, yeah, so American, McDonald's, right?
Yeah.
And my
God.
My granddaughter, you know, like I told you before, I mean, she has no outlet for her feelings. And so this is kind of a therapy for her. Her mom said, you know, if I thought she was any kind of another child type of child and couldn't handle it, right, I wouldn't let her go.
Right.
But she's a very strong little girl, you know. So.
How old is she?
She's 10.
10?
Mm-hmm.
And they were throwing garbage at a 10-year-old.
Yeah, they threw a bag of, a crunched-up bag of, I guess, McDonald's garbage, because it was a McDonald's bag.
God.
Yeah, threw it right at us.
Well, there's no point even my asking the question, but I'll just toss it out rhetorically. How can American citizens be so twisted that people who are protesting and demanding peace and an end to an illegal war get things thrown at them? It's disgusting. As you say this, as you relate this, Ramona, it gives me another one of those moments that I don't like to have, but I get them anyway, where I am ashamed to be an American. I'm just
yeah,
ashamed.
My granddaughter can't understand it. She said, how can they treat us like this? And she said, when we just want them to come home safe.
Well, I think you're doing, and I think your granddaughter's mom is doing a good thing, too, in allowing or encouraging your granddaughter to participate in these types of appeals for peace. Good for you. Good
there.
For both of you.
Yeah, her dad's over there, like I said, and, you know.
Yeah.
She has no other outlet. She's the only one in her school that has anybody over there.
I wonder if the protesters realized they were throwing garbage at a little girl whose dad is in Iraq.
Yeah, she's holding a sign that says, bring my daddy home.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And she's really disappointed she can't call on Friday night because she listens to you.
Well, have her call some night. I mean, get her to call in some night. Hell, we'll put her on. Have her call from her mom's house or something. Just on a regular night. On when we do youth night, yeah, you're right. We do limit it to 13 to 17-year-olds. But some other night, we've had kids. We've had young kids call in. Obviously with their parents there, but that's fine. If your granddaughter ever wants to call in, Ramona, you just tell her to pick up the damn phone and dial.
Yes, if she likes the show, she likes you. She said she doesn't like it when you get loud.
Well, I promise if she calls in, I won't get loud and I won't curse and I'll just be, you know, try to be a decent person. Because I do get carried away, and adults understand that. Kids, it's probably shocking.
Oh, no, because she was yelling at them. You know,
oh, well, she was yelling back, huh?
She was yelling back at them. And a couple of the people that were with us said, you know, try to tell her not to do that. And she said, I can't help it. She was angry. She said, I can't help it. I have to say something.
Yeah, I'm kind of like your granddaughter. I wish I were more evolved where I could turn the other cheek and be and get involved in passive resistance like a Martin Luther King or a Gandhi or disciplined demonstrators who don't respond to the yells. But I'm more like your granddaughter. I just want to yell back In a lot of cases, I just want to give them the middle finger, which I hope your daughter doesn't. But
she wouldn't.
Your granddaughter, I mean, yeah.
No.
Good for her. Well, anytime, Ramona, you tell your granddaughter, or her mom, anytime she wants to call in, have her call in. All right.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right, thanks, Ramona. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate what you had to say. Take care. We'll be right back, Truth Seekers.
I'm plenty capable of conducting foreign policy for the United States in a way that reflects positively on my nation.
Yeah, when does that start? Oh, my God. Back to your phone calls. Valencia is calling from Memphis, Tennessee. Hey, Valencia.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
I'm doing fine. I'm kind of nervous, so please bear with me. I just want to know if you read on CNN internet earlier today about Iraq's sectarian violence fueled a sharp increase in global terrorism. And my question is, why is the increase? I mean, it's because of what's going on with our president and his cronies. And they're blaming Iraq. They're saying that Iraq, they're blaming Iraq for the rise in the violence. But, I mean, my thing is, we started all this.
Yeah, I think what the point that's being made here, and a lot of people are going to spin it different ways. The Bush crime family is going to spin it one way. Media is going to spin it another. When you do to a country what the United States has done to Iraq going all the way back to 1992, so we're talking 15 years, first of all, you invade it twice. Secondly, you between the two invasions, you put 13 years of sanctions on the country, which means middle class is destroyed, children die, pregnant women die, the people who can't escape do escape. Then you invade again and execute the leader, disband the army, destroy the police force. What you wind up with is what I guess the term is a failed state. There's no government there. This al-Maliki guy that we have put in office means nothing. There is no government in Iraq. So what there is in Iraq is an occupying force, the United States and the United Kingdom and a few stragglers left over from some of these other countries. And we're sitting ducks. So the result is it does attract, it becomes a training ground for genuine terrorists, for people who normally would train to be terrorists in a camp someplace, in one of the former Soviet Union states or in somewhere in the Middle East or somewhere in Central or South America. There are people on this planet who want to kill other people and destroy and explode and blow up and overthrow. So what better training ground than one that has been created primarily by the United States, where you're not attacking dummies hanging on a rope with your bayonet. You're actually attempting and succeeding in blowing people up and planning urban warfare and planning acts of terrorism. So that, I think, is what's meant by the report that says Iraq has become the nexus where the training and the terrorism come together. And whose responsibility is Iraq? George, by God, Bush's. So I think that is what is meant, Valencia, by this increase in terror. I saw that report on the air tonight, too.
Yeah, and this is really sad because every day that I get, I turn on CNN or any channel that I watch, any network that I watch or I get on the internet and I, you know, read up. I mean, I just have to shake my head because it's just, it's so much death and it just, it bothers me terribly. It really does. It's just, it's just too
it's
much going
it's incredible.
On.
It's incredible. I don't see how someone can be a caring, thinking human being and not look at what the United States has caused, not just in Iraq, but in several spots around the planet, and just not shake our heads and hope that if there is a God, it's a merciful God, because what the United States has done is just an outrage. Valencia, thanks for checking in, okay?
All right, thank you, Mike.
All right, I appreciate your call. Take care. Take care. We'll talk again. And no, I'm not dropping my atheist credentials. I'm just saying, you know, for folks who do believe, surely they must believe that if there is a God, and that God is just, although you know what, in my reading of God mythology, no matter where, you know, what culture or time or society or civilization is involved, I've yet to come across a just God. I come across are jealous, furious, pissed off gods who believe in a lot of killing and blood and destruction if you irritate him. That's pretty much all I've come across. So anyway, Virginia is calling from Alameda, California. Hey, Virginia, welcome to the program.
You, Mike, it's been a little bit, and I I heard that mea culpa from Durbin.
Uh-huh.
It was on Keith Olbermann's show on Friday, and I told him you could download it.
Oh, really?
On the special commentary, and the guy almost broke down crying, okay? And what he said was, well, I knew about it, it helped me to secrecy, but I voted against the Iraq War resolution. So I get online, intelligence.senate.gov, and you can see who the members are of the Senate Intelligence Committee in all the different years. And there's my beautiful senator, my beloved Dianne Feinstein. You know how I love her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's a wannabe Hillary. And right, and right. She voted for the resolution, knowing what she did.
Right.
And Mike, I'm trying real hard to keep cool because I drink a lot of cappuccino too, you see, with the Puerto Rican Bustelo coffee. And I'm trying real hard to stay chilling and not go completely nuts.
Good, good, good.
I am so disgusted. I am so disgusted that people who were paid, bank, to sit on that committee, and Keith, and he had that Dana Milbanks guy from Washington Post,
right.
And they were like, these people could have said something. They didn't have to talk about what was specifically in the intelligence report. They could just say, the intelligence reports say one thing, and the administration is saying something else,
right.
And we stand. And if you cannot stand up to avoid all this carnage and risk jail, you don't even deserve to breathe. You do not deserve to breathe when you are being paid to have that responsibility and abrogated like that for your own little personal political little. I mean, honestly, Mike, Mike, they should not get a dime. Every dollar they got, every penny they got for any contribution since they did that, everything, they should give it all to the Iraqis. They should stand shoulder to shoulder with the soldiers and with their bare hands and no flak jackets and no Apache helicopters and no black watch guarding them, no nothing, just like all the rest of the poor, poor grunts on the ground. They should just go and dig themselves up into that sand and breathe it in and do something for the Iraqis until they get blown to bits. I'm fed up with them. They should not be in office. They should not be giving us any excuses. We should not be listening to a word. I don't care if there were more Democrats than Republicans on that committee at that time. Levin was the doggone chairman. I am, and he voted against it. And here they go. They vote against it. They give these half-assed speeches and don't out what is really happening and just kindly keep on taking all their campaign donations and everything else to run again. What did they do? Why should they run again? Why should they even be there? Why should they be breathing after what they did?
Yeah.
Why should they be breathing after what they did? All those thousands and thousands of lives, you could lay it on the laps of the Senate Intelligence Committee. Because they were the ones who had their hands on it, and they saw it. And Durbin said it. They knew it was a lie. and my beloved senator, who, you know, wants to, you know, keep all immigrants out of California, you know, even international students after 9/11, mm-hmm. you know, she voted for it, knowing. Mm-hmm. And I'm through with them. This is what I'm telling you with those DLC Democrats and all these punks. They deserve nothing. And sometimes you say, you know, I won't vote for Hillary. I don't care if hell freezes over. And sometimes you say, well, the hell with it. I'll vote for a Democrat no matter what. I can't. This one made me gag so badly. And I've gagged a lot over a lot of stuff that the Democrats have been doing over the past 15, 20 years. But mercy me, Mike. Mercy me, Mike. You're going to see that. You're going to know that. And mm-hmm. you're going to send them out anyway.
Yeah.
Come on, Mike. What do they deserve? Really, what do they deserve?
Well, I think I've reached that point, Virginia, like you already have. But the point where, you know, I've said before, vote for the candidate that you think is the peace candidate. I did that for Kucinich, and then in the primaries, in the general election, go with the Democrat. If the Democrat nominee is one of these DLC Democrats, and that includes Hillary, no, I'm not going to do it this time. Virginia, thanks. I appreciate your call. Thanks a lot. Appreciate you checking in. No, I can't do it anymore. I really can't. I really can't. I'll vote as much as I can Democratic on the state level, you know, for representatives and senators to Washington. But as far as the person that winds up with their finger on the trigger and the bully pulpit and so on and so forth, I just won't pull the lever or punch the Chad or mark the screen. I'm not going to do it anymore. I can't. I mean, I can't. I can't do it like she just pointed out, and maintain any kind of conscience. Can't do it. Well, thanks, Virginia. All right, we'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Just think about the millions who have no job at all. Let's see. And the men who wait for handouts with their eyes upon the floor. I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? Turn on your TV, turn it on so loud, and watch the fool a smiling there and tell me that you're proud. And listen to your leaders, the ones that won the race, as they stand right there before you and lie into your face. If you ever try to buy them, you know what they stand for. I know you're set for fighting.
Ten before the hour, once again, thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program in Phoenix at KPHX. Also handled your phone calls, our associate producer, Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall, and the moderators at MikeMalloy.com on the message board, and Catherine Bay, who's the executive producer of this program. Don't forget, Youth Night this Friday night on The Malloy Show. And if you haven't checked it out yet, go to NovaMRadio.com or MikeMalloy.com and read about the Truth Seeker cruise that we're going to take this October to the Mexican Riviera. We, as I mentioned earlier tonight, we've never cruised before, but it looks like fun. We're all going to go, the three of us, including Molly, and we're looking for like 25 or 30 intrepid souls who want to boogie along with us. There's some fantastic rates available. And if you book quickly, you can get a super nice balcony stateroom for just $10 more than an ocean view cabin. Now, since I've never cruised before, I'm not sure what that means, but it sounds pretty damn good to me. I do know this. On the cruise, there'll be several opportunities to hang out. We're going to have a meet and greet, a cocktail party, a little Q&A session, maybe some poker, but strip poker if you want to. I don't care. It's and then whatever happens when you go ashore on this sort of cruise, I don't know. We've certainly traveled, but not like this before. So we're looking forward to this. If nothing else, the curiosity factor. So join us. This is going to be fun. It's very limited. As you know, these kind of gigs are not like 100 people. I think they're setting, 20, 25 people is what they're aiming for, Kathy, something like that. So you have to get your reservation in very quickly. There's a phone number of the travel agency in Phoenix that's handling this. It's at novamradio.com or mikemalloy.com. So let's do it. Let's do it. Let's have some fun. I mean, it's hell, isn't it? It's just such hell out here. So let's go on this trip. Let's just take in October. It'll be nice. Back to your phone calls. Bob is calling from Miami. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. Good evening.
Hey.
Youth night.
Yeah.
You never take any adult calls.
No. Oh.
It always goes till midnight.
Yeah, well, that's true. Usually,
at least since you were on Air America.
Yeah, usually the kids, and when we've done it before, the kids usually come through and it lasts for 3 hours. And it's very challenging or entertaining in a positive sense. Talk radio.
Yeah, it's extremely interesting. I remember the first one. Dick Durbin.
Yeah.
Let me make a comment. I know Virginia already mentioned it. My dear senator was Bob Graham.
Uh-huh.
And he was on the Select Intelligence Committee.
Uh-oh.
And he stood up and said, this is a bunch of crap.
Oh.
Okay? So for Dick Durbin to stand up or sit down and say, well, I couldn't reveal any specifics because it would be violating the oath I took to secrecy is bull. Yeah. All he had to do was just what Virginia said. Stand up and say, hey, folks, they're lying to you.
Yeah.
This is all lies. There is no there. There's no weapons. It's all bunk. And let me tell you, I mean, it was out there. I knew it. You knew it before the war. The aluminum tube story.
Mm-hmm.
The way the press reported it.
All right.
Well, you know, they think that these might be for centrifuges. Some disagree.
Mm-hmm.
No, not some disagree. Anybody who knew anything about the nuclear industry and refining of uranium knew that those tubes would not work.
They were useless.
Period.
Yeah.
They were for rocket launchers.
Right.
But for Durbin to say that he couldn't, I wanted to say something, but you know, I was sworn to secrecy.
I know. It pisses me off as much as it obviously does you, Bob. Mm-hmm. You know, when I saw that story, anything I ever see from the Washington Times, red flags go up. But Durbin has not denied it, and apparently they're quoting statements he made on the floor of the Senate. So I've got to believe the story is true, and it's just infuriating. I've heard of cop-outs before, but that takes the cake. I couldn't say I was party to a lie that led this country to an invasion and occupation because I was sworn to secrecy. Oh, my God.
Disingenuous. Completely. And look, I fault every one of these people who didn't stand up and scream from the rafters that there was something rotten going on. These people came in 99 and 2000 and started pulling their stuff, and they haven't stopped. And even though, you know, I still think the Democrats are humans, they're not quite to the level of the neocons, which is something below human. They are, in fact, co-conspirators, they're complicit, and they have the blood guilt on their hands.
They do. Oops, where'd he go? All right, Bob, anyway, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate what you're saying. Marge is calling from Indiana. Hey, Marge, whatever you got to say, you got to say in a minute.
I did not have sex with those people from the escort service.
Yeah,
only got a massage.
Well, good. I'm certainly relieved to hear that.
What do you suppose they were rubbing?
Don't go there, Marge.
And that other jerk off. Whatever his name is, Wolfowitz, that's handing out $60,000 a year wage increases
to his girlfriend.
Oh, dear God. I'm going to. Well, where did I go wrong? Why can't I find guys that are going to hand out $60? No.
You know, for $60 million. Well, maybe $60 million you would like to, the comb-licking Wolfowitz.
Well, you know, I will say this. You know, they're so damn butt-ugly, the only way they're going to get anything is if they pay for it. And big time. What can I tell you? I mean, gee whiz.
I know Marge.
It's, golly gee.
I can't see you and Wolfowitz, though. I just,
oh, geez, please.
I can't. Marge.
You know, it's almost bedtime. You want me to throw up already?
No, I don't. Marge, we got to go. I'm sorry, but we got you on when the show is ending. We'll talk again. Thanks, Marge. And thanks to everybody else who participated tonight, however you did that. I'll see you tomorrow night. Okay, don't forget, Stephanie Miller in the morning on MSNBC. I'm telling myself, I'm putting a note beside the bed tonight. It'll say Stephanie Miller. Uh-oh. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.